Okay, so once in a small village tucked between two mountains, there lived a cobbler named Yaakov. Yaakov had a son named Mikael who was so ill that he could not leave his bed and so weak that he could neither move nor speak. And Yaakov and his wife spent the last year speaking to doctors and searching for a cure, but their son's illness remained a mystery. Yaakov realized that it was time to take matters into his own hands. He knelt at the side of his son's bed and he reassured him, saying, "Do not worry, my son. You'll see, everything will be fine." Mikael was too sick to respond, and the boy's mother left the room quickly so her son would not see her cry. Yaakov followed his wife out of the room and found her standing behind the door, weeping. "We must not give up so easily. He is leaving this world, my husband. I can see it in his eyes." And Yaakov knew there was truth in what she said, but he was not prepared to give up yet. "He's a strong boy. Strength will not help him," she said. "Only a miracle is going to save him now." And she was right. "You must go and seek the advice from the wise old man who lives in the very last house, at the very edge of the village," she pleaded. "People says he speaks with the angels and that he can perform miracles." So Yaakov gathered all the money they had in the world and set off to see the wise old man who lived in the last house at the very edge of the village. And he knocked on the door, and a young boy opened the door and he said, "Is your father in?" And the boy said, "My father's not in, but my grandfather is." He said, "Tell him that Yaakov the cobbler has come to see him on very urgent business." And the boy took him to the old man, whose face was as gentle as his voice. "Please sit down and tell me what disturbs you." And Yaakov told the wise man about his only son and how sick he was and how they'd searched without success for a cure and how he could sense that the angel of death was hovering above his son's bed. The old man closed his eyes and was quiet, and he said, "I will see what I can do." And the cobbler said, "I'm not rich, but even so, everything I have is going to be yours. I'll be happy to give you everything I have if you just help my son. If I am successful, my grandson could do with a new pair of shoes," he said to the cobbler. "So let me pray tonight and see what the angels have to say. You go home and rest, and we will speak in the morning." And the next morning, Yaakov returned to the house of the wise old man who lived at the edge of the village, the very edge of the village. And he said, "Did you pray last night when the door was open?" He said, "Yes, I did pray for your son, and my prayers reached all the way to the gates of heaven. But unfortunately, the gates were locked. I'm afraid there's nothing I can do to save your son." "This cannot be," Yaakov said. "This cannot be. He is so young. He is our only child. My wife will be devastated." Yaakov could do nothing but sit there in front of the man and bitterly weep. "I'm truly sorry," the wise old man said, "but I do not have the power to unlock the gates. But let me try one more time this evening. I cannot promise anything, but I'll see what I can do. Come back tomorrow." Right, it kind of bummed you out right there when he said, "I don't have the power. I went all the way to the gates, and the gates were locked," and everybody was like, "Whoa, wait a minute, this story took a really nasty turn." wise old man is supposed to have those answers. He prays to the angels. He creates miracles. Why can't his prayers open the gates of heaven? There is a Hawaiian man who's a therapist, and many of you might know of his name anyway, Dr. Hugh Lin. Anybody hear of it? He has a method. One hand, I love it. One hand. Are you Hawaiian? No. He's got that Hawaiian shirt. Nobody, no New Yorker wears anything but black. And he is in this wild pink shirt. We certainly know you're not from here. You can't be from here. When I went to Hawaii, there wasn't anybody in black. Let's just be honest. Not one person wore black the week we spent in Hawaii. So Dr. Hugh Lin is a therapist, and he is a man who studied. He went to a seminar. This is how it began. He went to a seminar of a woman who was a great healer in Hawaii. He had a family, had a wife, and he went to this seminar, and he heard this great teacher in Hawaii speak. He got up in the middle of her seminar after listening to her, and he thought, oh, this is ridiculous. I don't believe anything she said. And he left, and he came back a couple of weeks later, and he sat in the audience, and he listened to her again, and he thought, oh, my God, I don't even know why I came back. This is what she's saying is just impossible. I don't believe a thing she says. And he took off, and he came back. And the third time he came back, he sat there in the audience listening to this great Hawaiian healer talk about healing. And he went back home at the end of that evening and told his wife he was going to leave for a while. And he was going to follow this teacher because he had to hear everything she had to say. When he was done following her, that is how powerfully the message moved him. And I don't know if you have ever encountered a teaching or a teacher where you felt you could not step away until you had absorbed what they were trying to teach you, because what they were trying to teach you was going to change your life and you knew it. But at first, oh man. Guy in the green t-shirt. Wearing the peace and love t-shirt. We know who you are. And if you're on our mailing list, we know where you live. He, as you might, sometimes have found somebody who you know whose teaching just moves you so deeply. He followed her until he totally absorbed, after years of following her, what it was she was teaching, and he digested it and made it his own, and he created a teaching that then he took out into the world with his own understanding and his own way of making it more contemporary than hers, so that people in his age group could understand it. And he made his way to the Hawaiian State Hospital, into the ward for the criminally insane. So you know what kind of ward you're dealing with. And the criminally insane, the ward in the Hawaii State Hospital, when he entered it, he said it was devastating how dangerous it was for everybody to work there. So that the psychologists who worked there, the turnover was huge, he said. Nobody wanted to work there. The staff who worked there, he said the absenteeism was so great that they just didn't have enough people to run the ward. And he said when people were on the ward, even the people who worked there, they would walk with their backs against the wall. Right? You think your job is difficult? Walking with their backs against the wall so that they wouldn't be attacked from behind. True story, all true. And this was the ward he came into. It was so dangerous, nobody wanted to work there. When he came in, they asked him how he wanted to work as a therapist. He said, how? They said, how do you want to see your clients? Every psychologist does it differently, every therapist. So how do you want to do it? What do you want to do? Do you want to see people once a week? You want to see them every day? You want to see them once a month? How do you want to work? And he said, oh, I don't want to see the clients at all. I don't want to see anybody on the ward, right? He kind of worked out his job description really well there. He said, I'm going to be in my office. He said, all I need you to do is to bring me their files. That's what I want. I want their files. So that in their files, I can see a picture of them, because in every one of the files, there's a picture. And then I just want to see whatever information is in the files. That's all I want to do. That's all I need. Okay, that's all I need. Yaakov makes his way home, and he is so upset. This does not look good for him. When the door is closed and he takes off, the wise old man, the grandfather, goes to his grandson, and he says to him, I have a strange request to make of you. Go into town and find all the thieves, all the pickpockets, and all the criminals who live there, and I want you to bring them back to me. And the worse they are, the better. But grandfather, he said, isn't that dangerous? And the wise man put his hand on his heart, and he said, you must trust me. You must trust me. Dr. Len moves into his office, and he is sitting with files of every single person, whether they're manacled, whether they are medicated, whether it is indicated they will never be released because they will never be cured. He is sitting with a pile of folders on his desk. And he opens the first folder. And he looks at it. And I'm going to read you a verse from the Tao Te Ching. It says, hold to your male side with your female side. Hold your bright side with your dull side. It says, hold your high side with your low side. And then you will be able to hold the whole world. Okay? So hold the bright with the dull. Hold your high with the low. Okay? When the opposing forces within unite, there comes a power abundant in its giving and unerring in its effect. There comes a power in us when we do something that the Tao Te Ching, 81 verses, the Taoist way of life, 81 verses, a small little book. It says, if we can hold the things in ourselves that we love, the beautiful things about us, the sweet things about us, the kind things about us, the nice things about us, if we can hold that and at the same time hold the unkind things about us, the jealous things about us, the petty things about us, the dull things about us, the low things about us. If we can hold them both, we are going to be able to receive something that we cannot receive otherwise. We are going to be able to receive the whole world in our arms. We are going to be open to receive if we can do something that seems so counterintuitive, because we do not like the parts of ourselves we do not like. In fact, we do not love the parts of ourselves we do not love. Nobody loves their jealous side. Nobody loves their rageful side. Nobody loves their out of control side. Nobody loves their ugly side. We might tolerate it. We certainly spend a lot of time hiding it. We certainly don't want anybody to see it. We don't want it to show. And the Tao tells us something else. It says, hold it. I want you to hold it. And in holding it, something's going to happen. When these two parts of our nature unite, the part we love and the part we don't love, but we're holding them both, when we do that, we're going to be able to be open to receive what the world has to give us. And I'll tell you a crazy line. There's a crazy teaching in the Course in Miracles that says, do not be afraid. Let me read it exactly. It says, I am not afraid. I will not be afraid. I will not be afraid of love today. I will not be afraid of love today. And there isn't anybody that would say, oh man, I wouldn't take love. I would totally take love if it came to me. I'm waiting for love. My arms are open for love. I am just open for business when it comes to love. Where is he? Where is she? And we say, and it says to us, do not, I will not be afraid of love today. To hold our dull side, to hold the parts of ourself that are not beautiful, that are ugly, to hold the parts of our nature that are ignorant, that are blind, that don't want to wake up, that are addicted and don't want to give up the addiction. To hold that side, to love that side, to embrace that side. See, it says hold, but what it means is acknowledge, to hold, to love, to embrace, to make your own, to hold it. What an interesting word. It doesn't say love, because if it said love your dull side, most people turn the page. Mm-hmm. We can't love those parts of ourselves. Ew! We spend so much time trying to hide those parts of ourselves, which is why nobody has a three-way mirror and fluorescent lights in their dressing room. They're things we don't want to see, right? Who does? Outside of a store, nobody's going to want to look that deeply into things. Nobody's going to want to love certain things. We put it behind us for a reason. And it says, hold, hold. The way you might hold a baby, hold. The way you might hold your loved one, hold. The way you might hold yourself in a moment when something fearful happens and nobody is around to hold you, hold it. Do not be afraid of love today. It's such a crazy thing to say. And yet, so many of us are dying for love, dying for it. And the thought of giving that love to ourselves, that's just crazy. I mean, who does that? So when the wise old man asks his grandson to bring all the thieves and all the criminals and all the insane people and all the quote-unquote bad people, bring them off the streets from the village and bring them to me, it sounds like a dangerous request. We put that part of our nature in hiding because we don't want it to show. We don't want people to see that part of our nature that isn't perfect, that isn't kind, that isn't high and holy and light and spiritual and good and giving and generous. We know what the list is. And he brings all those people back with him. The grandson brings them all back with him, gathers up all the thieves and pickpockets he could find. And he was surprised by how easy it was to find them and how willing they were to come with him. Even they had heard of the wise old man who lived in the very last house at the edge of the village. They too had heard he could talk to angels, and for that reason they had never bothered him. And when the thieves arrived at his house, the old man invited them in. And he offered them refreshments. And he offered them a place to sit. And he went around the room and asked them their names. And after each of them introduced themselves, the wise old man began this way. He said, I've invited you to my home for a very special reason. I'd like you all to pray with me. Well, of course, they started laughing uproariously. This was the most ridiculous thing they had ever seen and heard, until the old man wasn't laughing and looked at them one by one with all seriousness, right in the eyes, and saw them. What hold means in the Tao is to embrace a part of ourself that we don't want to embrace, that we don't want to look at, that we don't want to invite in and invite to take a seat and offer refreshments to and ask it its name and look at it in the eye. What hold means is it's time to open our house to the very part of our nature that seems dark, that does not fit who we think we should be. And we need to invite that part of our nature out of hiding. And here is why. The ego, the broken ego. And we know Eckhart Tolle goes around the globe speaking of two things, and this is one of them. Our broken ego, our mask, the personality that we accumulate over our life based on our opinions and beliefs and what people want us to be and how they want us to be, this whole mask we put on that is formed, not how we're born, that is formed with who we think we should be, the ego is incapable of loving. And we need to really underscore that point of view because we listen to that voice in our head all the time. According to Tolle, we listen to that voice pretty much exclusively. And it's incapable, that part of our nature, that mask, that human personality that we've accumulated to become who we think we should be, who others told us we should be, it is incapable of loving, and it is incapable of loving ourselves. It is incapable of loving the parts of our nature that don't fit the mask of who we think we should be. We take that part, we put it into hiding. I worked with a woman who put into hiding the part of her nature at 3 years old. She learned from her mother, who was married to a man, her father, who was married to this woman's mother, her father. Okay, let me say that again. I worked with the woman. It started to get really creepy, didn't it? She was married to her father. Back, I worked with a woman who put a part of her nature in hiding that was a glorious part of her nature, glorious part of her nature, and it was the part of her nature that was her intelligence, her smarts, her brains, her ability to think and speak. And why'd she do that? Because she learned when she was young. She was born into a house where the dad hadn't even graduated high school. Now, of course, none of this spoken. We make our decisions when we're kids, not because everybody's talking everything out. We pick up the vibes. We feel it. We sense it. We hear it. We learn everything at the feet of our parents, whether they speak it or not. And what did she learn? You cannot be smarter than your dad. Nobody in the house can be smarter than dad because it's going to make him really angry if somebody knows something he doesn't know. Right? We feel that. We sense that. We have to survive as kids, so we figure out a way to survive. We figure out what the vibe is. Nobody has to tell us. And the next thing you know, she takes that part of her nature and she puts it in hiding. And it becomes a bad thing. See, isn't that crazy? The gift that is her, because she was born smart. How ridiculous is this? We're born smart. We all say, oh, if I was only born into the right family. She was. We are all born into the perfect and right family. Not because everything is perfectly lovely, but because everything is perfectly designed to put the focus entirely on the thing you came to bring into the world. And how do we bring into the world the thing we came to bring into the world? By putting up a wall, a stop sign, by putting up resistance and saying, you may not go here. By putting up resistance and the world or your family or your husband or your wife or your child telling you, you can't have that. And then you know what begins? What begins is the process of life that is called that compelling urge for what we are to emerge, to emerge. And we keep circling back around it. This woman grew up believing that she was just stupid. And that's the very word. She said, I'm a stupid woman. And man, that stupidity was her thief. That stupidity was the pickpocket. It was all the bad people, all the bad words you could use. She never wanted anybody to know how stupid she was. And she did that as a gift for her dad. I mean, we need to understand the things that we put in hiding that we think are bad. Go into the town, go into the village and collect all the thieves. Where did Dr. Hewlin go? He went to the place for the criminally insane. What do we hate most? We don't hate most other people. We hate most what is inside of ourselves that we've disowned, that we don't want to talk about or think about or look at, because the ego is incapable of loving. It cannot possibly love the darkness. So when the Tao says, hold your high side with your low side, hold your lightness with your darkness, hold what is beautiful with what is ugly, oh, please, that's not going to happen theoretically. Oh, I love this. I'm going to journal about this. But in reality, we are not going to go to the mirror, open the door, and welcome in and say, take a seat. Let me know you by name. I'm not going to do that because that would get us in trouble. Look, you're 3 years old. Your dad doesn't have a degree. Everybody in the house, unspoken, nonverbal. Keep in mind, unspoken, nonverbal. All this stuff happens beneath the surface, and it's called our survival. Her being smart was a danger to her being taken care of by her parents, to her having a home. Whatever it is we put in hiding for a good reason, because we need somebody to feed us and clothe us and bathe us and pay for us until we're old enough to figure out how life works. We can't be thrown out on the street. It's not possible. She takes it, she puts it into hiding as a gift to her dad. We do it out of love for our parents, and we do it out of the need to survive for ourselves. And it's a great deal. You know what? It's a great deal at the time. It's so smart. It's so wise. It's so creative. We all figure out a way to put those parts of us in hiding. And then we go into the store and somebody waits on us and they don't give us the right change or they can't make change. And we think, oh, how stupid. We're not talking to them. That's not what's bugging us. What's bugging us is the part of our nature that is that we've disowned, that we don't want to open the door and give a seat to and refreshments to and ask it its name and look in its eyes. So we project it out. This is psychology 101. We disown it, project it out, and then you become stupid. You stupid. And it feels kind of good to put people down in that way. Can't you make change? You can't make change without a register telling you how. Aren't they teaching you anything in school? You work yourself up into a foamy little lather. It's not even about them. It's about the part of our nature that we have disowned, that we can't do what the wise old man at the edge of town can do. And look how many times they said, the wise old man in the house at the far edge of town. We have to go down. We have to go a little further down, deeper down than we ordinarily go to the mask. We have to go deeper down, farther. We have to use eyes that aren't our eyes to be able to see what's really going on here. Because unless we do, we can't heal a damn thing. We can't change a damn thing. We can't fix a damn thing. Nothing changes. You wake up tomorrow, it's the same stinky day. You're repeating the same patterns. And look at what this line is. I love this. You're not going to love that it comes from the book of Job, but you know what? Here, anyway, Job did have something to say, and this is what he said. He said, Spirit gives each of us chance after chance. Chance after chance to be brought into the light that gives life. And we need to hear that because, man, so important. Spirit gives each of us chance after chance to come into the light that brings life. We think every time something hits the fan, Mikael, his son, gets sick. a part of us, we get sick, we lose a job, or a pattern happens, a guy leaves, and another guy leaves, and another guy leaves, or a door closes, and another door closes, and another door closes, or a pattern happens, we're in addiction, and we cannot get out of that addiction, we cannot, and it's spiraling out of control. All of these, according to Job, are chances that we are given over and over and over again to do something we don't want to do, which is hold the light with the dark, which is hold the high with the low, which is hold what we love about ourselves with what we don't. The wise grandfather opened the door and welcomed the thieves and the pickpockets and the criminals into his house. It took time in this little story. He gave them a seat. He gave them refreshments. He treated them like guests. He looked into their eyes. He called them by name. He was holding them. And it seems absurd because he is such a holy man. And we say, yeah, well, Dr. Len sat in his office. He didn't do any of those things. He did something different. Dr. Len sat in his office. And he spoke two sentences over and over. He opened a file. He didn't read it. He actually didn't need to read. We don't actually even need to know why that woman put her smart self in hiding, her sharp mind in hiding. We don't need to know, and we don't need to know what happened to her after it went into hiding. Because once we take a part of our nature and put it into hiding, you can rest assured the story doesn't go into a good place. You might survive your childhood, but then all of life is going to give you chance after chance to take that out of hiding. And we're going to look at chance after chance, and we're going to say, life keeps kicking me when I'm down. And that's not at all what Job said. He said, life keeps showing you when you're down to look deeper, to not be afraid to love that part that you have disowned. We need to go to the edge of the village. We need to go deeper, as I always say in here, one breath deeper down to a place in us that understands what's happening. Because here is a woman who kept failing at job after job after job. And the Tao's answer is hold it. Dr. Hugh Len did not need to know any of the stories that came from putting parts of ourselves in hiding, because the ego is incapable of loving. Meaning, if we are following the part of our nature that has created this persona, this mask, which is very clever, to live in this world, to not show people who we are, not even to admit it to ourselves, thinking people aren't going to want to know the real me. If we are living that way, we are in pain. If we are living that way, we're holding on one side of our nature and not the other, and something is going to happen that's going to have to come and wake us up to who we truly are, and Job calls it a chance. Spirit is giving us a chance to see that we're not holding something in the light. Why is it important to hold both? Because if you hold something in darkness, that part of your nature doesn't grow. Anything you don't let out of the closet gets stunted. Anything that gets stuck, that gets trapped inside of us, whatever that might be, your love of singing, your love of music, your love of accounting, you're wanting to be a different person than your family, you're wanting to love somebody your family wouldn't want you to love, you're wanting to come out and not do what everybody else does. Whatever it is about you that is different than the family you were raised in, wanted you to be or needed you to be, that you gave to them, whatever it is that you gave to them, if it's stuck in darkness, trapped in a net, it can't grow. The light can't get in, it can't be healed, and a part of our nature, half our nature, is stunted. And the life force that is in that part of our nature, it is frozen. There's such a great I got to read this. Listen. Far out at sea, a tuna fleet surrounded a group of spinner dolphins swimming over a school of tuna, catching them in a gigantic net. Small, powerful speedboats circled the animals, creating a wall of sound that disoriented and terrified the dolphins, who sank down silently into the net. And only the movement of their eyes showed signs that they were still alive. But one dolphin crossed the cork line at the edge of the net, and it knew it was free. It burst forward, propelled by a powerful wide tail stroke, and then it dove, swimming at full speed, down and away into the dark water, only to burst from the surface in a high, bounding series of leaps. This is us. This is us. And I could feel in the room when it was caught in the net and only its eyes flickering showed that it was alive. Many people were like, oh, that is so sad. That's so us. There's the part of our nature that is trapped in a net from childhood, And the only way you can even see that it's alive is just there's a little bit of movement happening there. It's trapped in a net and it looks like it's dead, but it's not. It's not. The thing we've put into hiding is not dead. It is still and it is waiting. And it is waiting for something to happen that we think looks like when I get the perfect job, I can be happy. When I get the perfect guy, I can be happy. When I get my book signed up, I can be happy. When I open the restaurant, I can be happy. When I open my practice and have more clients, I can be happy. When I get the inheritance, I can be happy. When I lose the 30 pounds, I can be happy. It's none of those things. It's none. It all comes back to one thing, only one thing that part of our nature is waiting for, and it is waiting for this, our hand. It's waiting for our hand to turn back and put itself on our body to hold ourself. The way we keep wanting life or a guy or a thing to hold us, which it can't, because the only thing that's going to allow that part of our nature to wake up and to be filled with that living life force, like the dolphin just tearing down into the sea and propelling itself up, that's the life force. That life force comes back through us when we open the door and we invite in that part of our nature we have in hiding, which for me was my gayness. And I had a great reason for hiding my gayness, because it was so inappropriate in my family. It would have killed my European parents, killed them. And so went into hiding. Like her smartness, I made that offering to my family to protect my parents, who I loved more than anything in the world. Of course you do. Even children who were abused, who were dragged out of their abusive parents' house, still scream for their parents. That's us. But when we can hold, we can open the door, as the old man did, and invite in and hold that part of our nature, something happens. Yaakov, the cobbler's only son, is very sick, the grandfather said to all of the thieves and the criminals and the pickpockets in the room. And he said he might not make it through the night. He needs your help. I would like you all to pray for him. And they were spellbound by this mysterious old man who could talk to the angels. And then something peculiar happened. They all closed their eyes. And they all bowed their head in prayer. Dr. Hewlin sits in front of a client folder, a man he's never going to meet or a woman he's never going to meet, not going to know, doesn't need to. And he says these two lines, I am sorry. I love you. And he says them over and over and over and over again until he feels it. They say that about prayer. Our prayer is answered Manifestation happens, they say, upon the moment of realization. When we feel it, when we feel it, we always think, why doesn't the world hear it? When we hear it, when we feel it, when we get it, when we say it enough times that it drops down and ceases being words and starts to be a feeling that moves through us, a real, live, living feeling. I am sorry. I love you. The very thing the ego is incapable of doing. The ego can't say those words. The ego, the mask, our personality self, our persona, the false us, cannot say, I am sorry, I love you. It comes from a deeper place within us. Only the heart, only the soul can say such a thing because it understands you're not stupid. It understands for this woman, she's not stupid. Life hasn't ruined her life by having her fired from every job because she's stupid. It is spirit giving her chance after chance to wake up and make a new decision to come out of hiding because it's safe now to come out of hiding. It wasn't then, but it is now. That is such a huge piece of information that nobody tells us. It wasn't safe then to come out of hiding. It is safe now to come out of hiding. And many of us get on the spiritual path and we layer on this other thing of now I got to be generous and I got to be charitable and I got to be sweet to everybody and nice and I can't have a temper, I can't say an angry word, I can't curse, and we lay all this other persona stuff on us that we are so far away from our true self. We are the dolphin not moving. We are trapped in the net of what we think we should be. The next day, as soon as the sun came up, the next day after this happened in the old grandfather's house at the edge of the village, the next day after that transpired where all the criminals came together to pray, the next day as soon as the sun came up, there was a lot of banging on the old man's door. He opened the door and there stood Yaakov. You know what's coming. How can I ever repay you? He said, my son looks as though he has not been sick a day in his life. It's a miracle, he said. A miracle has taken place. And Yaakov knelt, and he gently kissed the old man's hand. And behind his back, he pulled a pair of shoes that he had stayed up all night making for his grandson. He gave him the shoes. And before the grandson could even say thank you, Yaakov danced away down the road. When Pavel closed the door, the grandson closed the door. He asked, how can this be, grandfather? How can this be? You are so good. You are such a good man. You are so honest. You are so pure. And these people who I brought home yesterday were cheats and liars and thieves. The very opposite of you. Couldn't you have asked better people to pray with you and help you unlock the gates of heaven than them? Right? Dr. Len, all day, every day, I am sorry, I love you. Can you imagine if you take out that which is in your dull side, that which is in hiding, that which is unlovable, that which is undeserving, that which you don't understand, that which you wish were otherwise, if you take it out of hiding and hold it and say, I am sorry, I love you. He said it over and over again. He was at this hospital for 4 years. Within the first year, those criminals that were on medication started to come off their medication, not by anything he had done or said to them. Those that had been shackled, those criminally insane people that had been shackled, were unshackled. And those criminally insane people in that ward in the Hawaii State Hospital, not prison, hospital, that they said would never recover and would never gain their freedom, gained their freedom. And there was a whole new feeling in this place. Nobody walked with their backs against the wall, afraid of being attacked from behind. Turnover then became non-existent. Absenteeism went away. Not a problem. The place changed. He was there 4 years. I am sorry. I love you. Listen to the Course in Miracles. The Course in Miracles has this one line, and I'll say it again. It is one line. I will not be afraid of love today. I am sorry. I love you. I am sorry. I love you. I am sorry. I love you. I will not be afraid of love today. And we're talking about ourselves. Here is what the grandfather said to his grandson. When I prayed the first night for Yaakov's son, I found that the gates of heaven were locked shut and there was nothing I could do. When I prayed the second night, I had the thieves assist me. A good thief knows how to break and enter. And this time, he did so with prayers. And the prayers of the thieves provided the key to opening the gates. You see, the thieves represents the things in us we think are bad. We think are wrong. The parts we think we need to change in order to be happy. We have to recognize and acknowledge those things. When we embrace those parts as the thieves did with their prayers, we are turning the key and unlocking the gates of heaven. And then we can receive the blessings, and then we can receive the good fortune. Cahil Gibran says, "You say that you would give, but only to the deserving. The trees in your orchard don't say that. The flocks in your field don't say that. They give that they may live, for to withhold is to perish." It is time to hold the part of your nature as closely to your heart that you do not love as the part of your nature that you do. For then, once united, the Tao tells us, all parts of you, out of hiding, out of hiding, there will come a power, such a force, that will bring you the ability to receive the whole world in your arms. And the whole world means all of life's riches. The moment she came to peace with letting the part of her nature out of hiding that she called her stupid and ignorant self and gave it a place at the table and sat it down and spoke to it and welcomed it and held it and loved it, it ceased to be a problem in her life from that day forward. Within the year, she was in college, and within 5, she was in her own private practice doing what a woman like her could do better than anybody who had ever learned that skill in a book. Hold the part of your nature you feel you cannot hold. Love the part of your nature you feel you cannot love. Welcome the part of your nature you cannot welcome. And you will be able to receive the whole world. Everything you wish, everything you've waited for in your arms. For Spirit gives us chance after chance to enter into the light that gives life. But only your hand can do the holding. And only your mouth can do the loving, and only your heart can do the embracing. I am sorry. I love you. And if you said it 100 times a day, it would not be too many. It would be a beginning, and you would have begun. Enough said.